Hi, this is Herb from The Night Shift, and you're listening to A Little Dead Podcast, your place for full frontal nerdity.
Welcome to episode 114 of A Little Dead Podcast, your place for full frontal nerdity when it comes to running, hammering, and bleeding. I'm your host, McPierce. This week, I watched the post-apocalyptic thriller, The Collapsed. I'm also going to talk about Keith Latch's latest novel, Blood Brothers. Mike Zombie's dead and loving it with Day of the Dead. Misfit Boy is back.
Nice.
To get us in the zone this week with No Time Like the Past, and On Thursday We Leave for Home. And lastly, I'm going to talk about the video game Deadblock. But before I get to talking about all that, I'm first going to talk about all this news. First up is superhero news.
Superhero news!
The Amazing Spider-Man hasn't even come to theaters yet, but the sequel already has a release date. The movie, which I've heard will be named The Spectacular Spider-Man, will hit theaters on May 2nd, 2014. Two other films are coming out that summer as well from Marvel. One scheduled for May 16th, 2014, and the other for June 27th, 2014. It's not Thor 2, which is scheduled for 2013, but what those films are isn't known at this time. And here's to not even a year passing before I was proven right. Marvel released the cover for Fantastic Four number 600, and on it is the Human Torch. There's some speculation, since the uniforms are the older ones and Sue Storm looks young, that it's a flashback or a retrospective or some other type of issue. But some of us believe that, since he was never shown to have actually died, it's Johnny Storm back from the negative zone. In zombie news... Are you a fan of the Italian zombie movie parts 1 and 2? Do you not yet own a copy of it? Are you insane? Well, right now, Crazy is going to pay off for you. You can buy a copy of the Italian zombie movie, both parts, for half price at only $5 for both films. That's a steal and a half, given that the movies are so chock full of zombie goodness, homages, gore, and laughs. So go to the show notes, click the link, and buy it today. Back in episode 108, I reported that Matthew Fox had left the cast for World War Z. This week, several news outlets had photos which showed that information to be in fact wrong. There are pictures showing Fox on the set of the film in London. Also in pictures released was Bryan Cranston, who is currently appearing in Breaking Bad on AMC, the same network which airs The Walking Dead. World War Z is scheduled to hit theaters on December 21st, 2012. In science fiction news...
Program complete. Enter when ready.
Science fiction news... J.J. Abrams has said that he would like to have a gay character in Star Trek II. Or at least he's open to it, though there are no plans specifically to include one. But he did make a mistake. Abrams wondered why there haven't been any gay characters in Star Trek to date. What he isn't aware is that there was in fact at least one instance of a gay character. Just not in a video or animated episode, but in a Star Trek novel by Pocket Books. Though I can't remember the title of the book offhand, it involved a female security guard and another crewman who get their brains switched and both agree to keep the other's body since they were both, quote, more comfortable that way. Justin Lee, the director for the next Terminator film, as I reported back in episode 112, has reportedly had meetings with both Arnold Schwarzenegger and James Cameron regarding the project. The meeting was, quote, unofficial. Cameron is not attached to the project, and Schwarzenegger is only tentatively attached. No date or other information is available at this time. In horror news...
Horror news!
The big-budget, big-named cast film Contagion is set to hit theaters on September 9th, and with names like Gwyneth Paltrow, Jude Law, and Matt Damon, people have mixed feelings about whether it will be good or bad. but the latest trailer makes it feel like it could be a great entry into the infected horror genre. A 3D Hungarian horror film is coming out soon, called Ginger Clown 3D. It features the voice talents of Tim Curry, Brad Dourif, Lance Henriksen, and Michael Winslow, as well as Sean Young, and will hit theaters this fall. Another film, which A.G. Pasquella turned me on to, called I Declare War, is filming right now. The website says it's about 12 kids playing a game of war, but the viewers see it through their imaginations, so the guns and the killing become real. And I quote, "It's like Stand By Me meets Full Metal Jacket." I've also been in touch with the people who are making Lucifer's Angels, a film coming out in a few months. The teaser trailer looks pretty chilling, especially when we get to the clown. I really do think that coulrophobia is the new foundation for horror. And finally, in Real Science News...
Real Science News.
SETI is back. The Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence Project had shut down previously due to lack of funds, but donors such as Jodie Foster, who starred in Contact, which is another podcast, and sci-fi writer Larry Niven, and over 2,000 others have donated funds to help fund SETI's operations. It costs about $2.5 million per year to run the operation, so they'll continue to solicit donations. But the good news is that SETI is back online. At least for now. So what do you think of this week's news? Do you have any news that you'd like to share? Then call me up on the Little Dead comment line at 206-338-0665 and let me know. Or you can email me at alittledead@gmail.com. And speaking of listener feedback, here's what we have in the Little Dead mailbox.
Uncle Bill, calling to say I love you. And I really enjoyed our day together. I don't know if anyone told you, big news, hush, hush, all the secret shit. Susan, Mark is back in prison. What can I say? He got caught driving without a license. And that's what they say. That's what he says when he called Ginger. But his trial's coming up the 27th of the end of the month or whatever. God damn it, of all the phase losers other than myself. I love you, sweet face, and we can't go to that vintage anymore. They've changed management, they've changed cooks. I was there the other night with my family, and everything sucks. But such is life. We will get a new rendezvous. I love you, my little Liebchen. That's German for my loved one. I love you, kid. And you don't have to call me back. Just accept this message as Cheyenne Bodie called you. Oh, bye. Love you.
Oh! Oh, great! It's Monsters, our favorite show!
Shh. It's starting.
It's to be reality. But there is, unseen by most, an underworld. A place that is just as real, but not as brightly lit. A dark side.
Are you a horror fan searching for more coverage of small screen productions? Looking to find the latest spine-tingling web series or viral videos? Still trying to figure out if that new zombie video game is going to separate itself from the pack or lay dead rotting on the shelf with the rest? Come check out EvilEpisodes.com, where we discuss the latest news and commentary on everything horror that originates from the small screen. Coverage includes TV shows, series, miniseries, anthologies, made-for-TV movies, Stephen King, Asylum, I'm Looking in Your Direction. Also, web-based horror and horror-related video game discussion. Also coming soon, Evil Episodes podcast featuring discussion, commentary, opinion, rants, mumblings, praise, rage, and a whole lot more. For details and information, or to contact the show, please visit evilepisodes.com now and help spread the word in anticipation for the first episode of the podcast launching soon.
Well, how's that for a sappy ending? Was it a little too graphic for you?
Blood Brothers is the 2011 action thriller novel written by Keith Latch. It tells the tale of Michael Cole, a successful real estate investor with secrets. Some of those secrets aren't so well hidden, and some of them were somewhat forgotten but have decided to resurface. And all of them are going to change Cole's life forever. Michael Cole grew up in Benedict, Mississippi. He was a poor kid from a white trash family that lived in a decrepit section of town. He was a fat kid as well, and all of those elements came together to make him the target of constant bullying by his peers. That is, until the day he meets the guy who would change his life, Jerusalem Jerry Garrett. When we're introduced to Michael, however, it's long after those times, and it's in a style that Latch uses throughout the book. The book breaks up chapters into current events and historical events, and in doing so, Latch makes his main character far more sympathetic to the reader. If you read about him in a purely chronological, linear manner, then you would see him go from beaten-down chump to hero to douchebag to victim to something else. And that would have been an injustice to the characters and to the story. Instead, Latch takes us through the story by showing us flashbacks that not only explain events in the past, but which also mold the character of Michael Cole for us as the reader. He goes from what would have been a two-dimensional, cheating businessman that you would likely despise and turns him into a guy with a lot of depth, someone for which you can truly feel compassion and some attachment. Latch's writing style is engaging and gripping. If I were to ding the book for anything, it would be for another character being named Jerry in a section of the book, and a single case where the narrative was kind of confusing as a result of that. But all in all, this was a very dramatic, strong read, and something I'll be reading again. And on our buy it, borrow it, or don't bother scale, I'm going to rate Blood Brothers by Keith Latch a borrow, if not an outright buy. I love Latch's writings, and this is the best example of his style and storytelling to date.
Cynthia, so glad you're home. I have some very exciting news.
Well, I have some news for you too, Jonathan.
Me first. I've just discovered a great podcast called Mail Order Zombie, and it's hosted by a married couple just like us.
Yeah. Speaking of that, I had a meeting with the lawyer today and...
It's mainly about direct-to-DVD zombie movies, but the show covers the whole range of zombie culture. Games, books, plays, comics, you name it.
Well, as you know, I've been spending a lot of time with my massage therapist, Rodrigo.
Is he into post-apocalyptic novels, films, and TV shows? Because if he is, you should let him know that those things are all covered on Mail Order Zombie, too.
I have taken the liberty of putting your belongings in these garbage bags over here.
Hope you remember to pack my MP3 player, because I'd sure hate to miss the next episode of Mail Order Zombie. You can find it online at mailorderzombie.com, or just look for Mail Order Zombie in the iTunes store, and it's all free!
Yes! Like I hope to be very soon.
So what is it you wanted to say to me, Cynthia?
You're an idiot.
Oh, I love you too.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight. A dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another installment of Get in the Zone. My name is Misfit Boy, and I'll be taking you on another trip back in time to the good old days of the Twilight Zone. And this week, well, I guess you could say a man with a time machine is going to try and change important past events. Will it work? Well, we'll see. And then, later on, a leader of a group of a spaceship crash survivors tries to maintain his control over his people. But first, as we always do, let's listen from the man who got us there in the first place, Mr. Rod Serling.
Exit 1, Paul Driscoll, a creature of the 20th century. He puts to a test a complicated theorem of space-time continuum. But he goes a step further, or tries to. Shortly, he will seek out 3 moments of the past in a desperate attempt to alter the present, one of the odd and fanciful functions in a shadowland known as the Twilight Zone.
This episode is entitled No Time Like the Past, and it revolves around a man named Paul Driscoll, and he uses a time machine with, well, I guess you could say noble intentions to go back in time and alter past events in such ways to minimize the loss of human life. After failing to warn a Hiroshima police captain about the atomic bomb, and also the failing to assassinate Adolf Hitler in August of 1933, immediately before the outbreak of World War II in September of 1939, and failing to change the course of the Lusitania to avoid being torpedoed by a World War I German U-boat. Well, he accepts the hypothesis that the past cannot be changed, and he then uses the time machine to journey to a town called Homeville, Indiana, in 1881, with the intention of escaping and living out a quiet, uncomplicated life. He then realizes that President James A. Garfield will get shot the next day. However, he does allow the assassination to happen, and after reading in a history book that Homersville Schoolhouse will burn down because of a kerosene lantern thrown from a one-way wagon, he spots the wagon and attempts to prevent this event from occurring, but instead, he alone is the one that causes the fire that he intended to prevent. So he returns to his hometown, having learned not to tamper with the past. This episode's not really that bad. I would definitely say check it out. It's from season 4.
Incident on a July afternoon, 1881. A man named Driscoll who came and went and, in the process, learned a simple lesson. Perhaps best said by a poet named Lathbury, who wrote, "Children of yesterday, heirs of tomorrow, what are you weaving? Labor and sorrow? Look to your looms again, faster and faster, fly the great shuttles prepared by the master. Life's in the loom. Room for it. Room. Tonight's tale of clocks and calendars in the Twilight Zone."
All right, very exciting stuff. I think we're pretty much ready to go here with this podcast.
What the hell is a podcast? I mean, why don't you just tape it? What are you doing?
You don't have to tape it these days, Frank. You just record it right onto the computer.
This is William Benteen, who officiates on a disintegrating outpost in space. The people are a remnant society who left the Earth looking for a millennium. A place without war, without jeopardy, without fear. And what they found was a lonely, barren place whose only industry was survival. And this is what they've done for 3 decades, survive. Until the memory of the Earth they came from has become an indistinct and shadowed recollection of another time and another place. 1 month ago, a signal from Earth announced that a ship would be coming to pick them up and take them home. In just a moment, we'll hear more of that ship. More of that home and what it takes out of mind and body to reach it. This is the Twilight Zone.
This episode is entitled, On Thursday, We Leave for Home. Now, 30 years before, in 1991, an exploration to the hellish desert planet V9 Gamma was stranded, and the group of people had no choice but to begin their own small settlement there. Now, the group's leader, Captain Benteen, has maintained a, well, I guess you could call it a totalitarian grip upon his group. He believes that this strict discipline prevents them from giving up hope in the harsh, unyielding environment, which is basically like a giant desert. Now, when the rescue mission from Earth finally arrives, Benteen is at the first as jubilant as others, but he then begins to raise objections to leaving the asteroid behind and tried to persuade others to stay. Everyone else chooses to return home, but Benteen announces that he will remain behind alone if he must. On the day the people are boarding the ship, the rescue mission's Colonel Sloan and Benteen's second-in-command, Al Baines, search for Benteen, to give him one last chance to change his mind. But he's nowhere to be found. After they give up and leave, Benteen emerges from the top of a cave that has sheltered his people. As the ship prepares for takeoff, Benteen pretends his people are all still there. Then, remembering the beauty of Earth, he realizes that he wants to go home. He rushes out screaming for the ship to come back, but by now, obviously, it's too late. He is now stranded on V9 Gamma for the rest of his life, completely alone in the barren, lifeless desert. Well, that's it for me for this week. See you next time, right here on Get in the Zone. My name is Misfit Boy, and, well, if you listen to the show, you know me. I'm in the zone.
William Benteen, who had prerogatives. He could lead, he could direct, dictate, judge, legislate. It became a habit, then a pattern, and finally a necessity. William Benteen, once a god, now a population of one.
Motion Picture Massacre is dedicated to exploitation, cult, grindhouse, and horror films from the last 7,500 fucking years. I don't fucking know. It's everything. If you're interested in that, check out motionpicturemassacre.com, or if you're on iTunes, search Motion Picture Massacre and you'll find it. This has been your announcer, Cowardly Fuck Your Bags, signing off. Eat a dick.
Dead Block is the 2011 third-person action arcade zombie defense game developed by Candy Gun Games and published by Digital Reality, with a ska rockabilly soundtrack composed by Vampire State Building. The game is available on Xbox Live Arcade and PlayStation Network, and a Windows PC-based version is planned to be released in future. The game is set in the 1950s, back when life looked so much simpler than today. You play one of three characters, Jack Foster, the construction worker, Mike Bacon, the Boy Scout, or Foxy Jones, the meter maid. And at points where all three characters are in play, you can move back and forth between them. The survivors must work independently as well as together in order to break down their environments, build barricades to block the undead or traps to kill them, and find the solution to their zombie predicament. And that solution is related to what created the zombies in the first place. Rock and roll.
You wanted the best and you got it! The hottest band in the land! Yeah!
On each map, the survivors must search for the three components for playing rock and roll music. A guitar, a pick, and an amplifier. And when they have all three pieces, they can start jamming. And that music, which originally pulled the dead out of the ground, causes them to shake, rattle, and roll until they fall apart and go back to being dead. The game itself is broken up into 10 single-player levels and 8 other co-op levels. And, of course, each level becomes more difficult with additional rooms, more points of entry for the undead from both within the building as well as through weak spots, such as doors and windows, from the outside. In the upper right corner of the display is a local map showing each of the characters, the undead surrounding them, and the general map of the structure. Players can also see the life meters for the characters as well as the components they've discovered so far for defeating the dead. And in the bottom left corner is a compass indicator showing the supplies the survivor has with them. Survivors must collect components for building simple barriers in doorways and windows. They can also collect bolts for building more sophisticated traps, such as guillotines and drop buckets for windows and doors. They can collect stakes to place on the electric heaters in order to attract and then electrocute a zombie, and they can collect coins to drop into jukeboxes in the map. When a zombie hears the music, they can't help but to stop and dance themselves back to death. And characters also have their own unique attacks based on their personalities. There are various types of zombies, from old men who get hacked pretty easily, to giant masked zombies that can inflict a lot of damage. But the real damage is when the zombies come at you en masse. When moving through a doorway, you have to get the zombies out of the way in order to pass, a trick that is just not easily done. Really, this game seems so simple, but it is just very hard to play. Not so hard that it's frustrating, but just hard enough that it's challenging without pissing you off. But one thing I'm not fond of is the hunting through boxes and containers to find items. There are three main ways to grab an item: alternately hitting the triggers, letting semicircles turn and hitting the A button at the right moment, or else scrolling side by side through a list of silhouettes looking for the right item to hit A. There's also a spinning wheel selector, but that's solely for getting the components for playing music, and so only comes up 3 times per map. Anyway, the alternating triggering method is just annoying. It's repetitive and doesn't quite click for me as a way to find items. It just seems like a silly way to grab a single thing out of a box, but I can see the reasoning behind it. It's simulating, to me at least, the frantic searching through a box to find something useful. But it can feel frustrating when, as you're banging away at the triggers, the search stops because it took too long. Another frustrating but satisfying piece, when done right, is building the barriers in doors and windows. When you start, a bar comes up with a small segment that designates the, quote, sweet spot. An indicator rolls back and forth, and you have to hit the A button to hammer a nail perfectly. If you hit A as the indicator is on the sweet spot, then the nail is perfect and the board holds longer. Anywhere else, and it either bends the nail or else the nail doesn't seat and you have to try again. And this game will have you trying again and again. It's difficult, but it's not impossible. It's fun without being cheesy. Well, not too cheesy. And it's got enough variation to it, since the items you need are not in the same place every time, that you can have fun with it. And on our buy it, borrow it, or don't bother scale, I'm going to rate Deadblock a borrow and probably a buy. You'll like it at least and probably want to buy it or else go play it at a friend's.
Sorry for the holdup, folks. There seems to be a slow-moving podcast up ahead, so we're going to have to sit here for a spell. You just remain seated with your headphones on, and we'll be right with you.
Darn it, the episode was just getting good.
Yep, I never miss this show. Now what are we going to do?
Well, we could tell folks about our show, the Disney Indiana Podcast.
Well, in our bi-weekly episodes, we discuss books, movies, music, theme parks, video games, and whatever else in the Disneyverse we want to talk about.
Playful spooks have interrupted our show. Please remain seated in your MP3 mobile.
We also like to share audio clips, interviews, and other surprises along the way. If you enjoy all aspects of the mouse, come hang out in Disney, Indiana.
You can find us at www.disneyindiana.com or subscribe to our show within iTunes. We are also featured on Reedy Creek Radio on live365.com and the Disney Community of Tomorrow at d-cot.com.
You won't find Disney Indiana on any map. It's a state of mind, or more precisely, a state of heart.
Hopefully our podcast won't break down now.
Hey, here comes a podcaster.
If you would, please exit your MP3 mobile and follow me out of the podcast. Thank you.
Hey everybody, it's your pal Mike Zombie, and this week we're going to talk about Day of the Dead from 1985, part 3 of the George Romero trilogy that you hear so much about. Night of the Living Dead was a survivable night, and it was designed to be. You know, everybody kind of the next day was rescued and did their thing. Dawn of the Dead was a bit more intense as to destiny. Who knows what really happened? That movie had a long shelf life for them being there at the mall. It wasn't just a one-night ordeal. And I've never really considered how the timeline falls, I guess, all that much. But to say that Dawn and Day of the Dead are an extension, you know, and they may run concurrently for all I know, in two different areas. But like the newspaper says, the dead walk. Now, I know this isn't considered a talking zombie film, and it shouldn't be. I mean, they go a lot, but that's not what I'm talking about. But Dr. Frankenstein puts a phone in front of Bub and says, you know, talk to your Aunt Alicia. and he picks it up, kind of haphazardly holds it sideways next to his head, out of what he's seen, you know, out of memory. And he says, he mumbles something about Alicia, very quiet. So this, to me, is also the talking zombie film. Not in a campy way, not in a Return of the Living Dead way, but, you know, in this bridges the gap and turns them from eating machines into us for me. And that was my favorite part of this film. It made me identify with the zombie a little more. It made it so it wasn't just, you know, I'm not in the boat waiting for the shark to attack. You know what I mean? I'm now linked to that creature as I am to Bub. This is a great Romero film. And this is very nice special effects by Savini. The zombies do a great job in this. And the players do an extra good job. Anyway, watch this film. You're going to love it. It's the favorite Romero film for many people. And I certainly understand why. Anyway, watch this movie. What are you doing? Watch this and not the remake. I'll have to watch the remake because, you know, I'm watching every zombie film ever made. And sometimes after I watch a movie like this, it's a good thing. That's my review for this week. Please enjoy Day of the Dead from 1985. See ya.
This is 911. What is the nature of your emergency?
I've been robbed!
Please list the items in question.
My latte is only a single!
You're calling from a cell phone, aren't you?
Yes.
In your car?
Yes. And there's definitely not $1.50 worth of sprinkles on top. They totally ripped me off!
You drive a blue BMW, this year's model, don't you?
What?
License plate XYZ PDQ?
Yeah?
For frivolous waste of 911 operator time, you are removed from the gene pool. Don't let this happen to you. Make sure your emergency is a real emergency.
Wishful thinking, eh? But wishful thinking is the root of good fiction. For more good fiction, check out 19 Nocturne Boulevard at www.19nocturneboulevard.com. That's 19 Nocturne Boulevard.
We are all collectively responsible for what may be the greatest preventable Holocaust in the history of planet Earth.
I have 30 years of experience as an investigative journalist. I've broken major scandals. Going out to try and map how the world really worked as opposed to the way we were told it worked.
Our map has proven deadly accurate. My economic predictions, we had it so right. In 2006, we said, get out of debt right now. Check your mortgage carefully. We issued a whole series of warnings.
There will be nothing like we have ever seen before.
Everything that we said was going to happen is taking place right now.
Gold prices, Pakistan, Afghanistan, the stock market. It's not that Bernie Madoff was a pyramid scheme. The whole economy is a pyramid scheme. Of course I've been called a conspiracy theorist. But I don't deal in conspiracy theory, I deal in conspiracy fact. The mortal blow to human industrialized civilization will happen when oil prices spike and nobody can afford to buy that oil, and everything will just shut down. Unlike the Great Depression, we do not have infinite resources. Nothing grows forever. There is a cycle: birth, growth, maturation, decline, and death. Cars don't run. The mail stops getting delivered. Planes don't fly. Law enforcement stops working. This is all part of the collapse. If you're in a camp and a bear attacks, you don't have to be faster than the bear. You only have to be faster than the slowest camper. The challenge being faced by the human race now is either evolve or perish, grow up or die. You have to believe, not hope, not pray, that there's a way out of it, and you're going to find it.
The Collapsed is the 2011 sci-fi horror film written and directed by Justin McConnell. It stars John Fantasia as Scott Weaver, Steve Vieira as Aaron Weaver, Anna Ross as Rebecca Weaver, and Lisa Boulay as Emily Weaver. It was produced on an estimated budget of $150,000, but has no reported revenue. No tagline for the film was listed on IMDb, where it received 2.7 out of 10 stars based on 27 votes as of today. 2.7 votes? What the fuck? That's not right, and I'm going to tell you why, since I gave this film 9 stars myself. Yeah, 9 stars that I feel it deserves for a lot of reasons. The film tells the story of a family attempting to survive in a world that has been attacked and destroyed by some unseen thing. A thing that is chasing them as they run through the woods trying to survive. The family, whose name is Weaver, consists of 4 people. The parents, a son, and a daughter. But as we find out, there was a 5th, another son. But he was killed by the father, and not by accident either. As the story unfolds, we learn about what has happened through little disjointed pieces of dialogue and dreams. Things that don't seem to make sense, at least at first. But by the end of the film, not only do you put it all together, but when you have put it all together, the story becomes one that is so original that the initial confusion was worth it. The vagueness as to what's chasing them and what's happening is what keeps the suspense going throughout this film. You're only fed as much as is needed to let you know there's a monster in the closet. But does it crush the suspense by showing you the monster? As long as that door stays closed, then you're on the edge of your seat, waiting. Oh, I know you can't wait, so let me tell you what happens. You see... Get it? Yeah, that's what I thought as well. The film reaches out and grabs you right from the start with the action. Like similar stories such as The Walking Dead and Falling Skies, it's set after the collapse of civilization. But the title doesn't just refer to what's happened to society, or to the human race. It's also related to what's happened to the Weavers themselves. We see how the family is also pulling itself apart at the seams even as they try to live long enough to get to the next spot where they can rest, even for a moment. Really, I can't recommend this film enough. It's got action, a great story, wonderful acting, especially on the part of Fantasia, who really carries this film and keeps you watching. And the big thing is, it's got rewatchability. I'll be watching it again, and on our buy it, borrow it, or don't bother scale, I rate The Collapse a buy, since you'll be watching it again as well. But it's not available yet on DVD. You need to find where it's screening and then go check it out. But when it comes out on DVD, then definitely buy it. It's that good.
When we get to Dover's Bend, even if Daniel's alive, what then?
I think your father's right. It's the safest place for us.
No, I mean, what then? Is that all life is now? We just live and survive?
You'd rather we didn't? It's better than the alternative.
Is it? I had a life with Jeremy, and now he's dead. Everyone's fucking dead! So, is that all life is then? We live and kill?
What your father
no,
did...
No, don't make excuses for him. I know he had to do it. I just... I know it's what had to be done.
There's nothing I can say to make us feel any better about this.
I don't need to feel better. I just worry about what happens when I have to make that choice myself.
Don't worry. It takes a special breed. You're not like your father.
That's just it. I am like him. I think I'd do the exact same thing if I had to.
Faulkner, Faulkner, Steinbeck, Steinbeck, Hemingway, Hemingway, Calder? Robert Calder wanted nothing more than to be counted among literature's heavyweights. Only problem was, he didn't have any talent. But, waking in the hospital after a near-fatal car crash, he discovers that he now has the ability to write better than he could have ever dreamed. As he lands a publishing contract, the big checks start rolling in, and he hits the bestseller list. He understands just what a gift he has received. But when the horrors of his novel start to become a reality, he fears his gift is the ultimate curse, and Robert finds out why they always say it's deadly at the top. Bestseller. The podcast version novel, written and read by Keith Latch, is now available on iTunes. The novel is also available as a trade paperback. Order your signed copy now at www.keithlatch.com.
Thank you for joining me for this week's episode of A Little Dead Podcast. Big thanks to Misfit Boy and Mike Zombie, as always. Big thanks to Zaba Cordovan at Digital Reality for the copy of Dead Block. Big thanks to Keith Latch for Blood Brothers, and a great big thanks to Justin McConnell for the copy of The Collapsed. Join me next week when I'll visit an abandoned carnival and review Closed for the Season. But until then, I'm out of here. So till the next episode, this is your friend McPierce saying, later.
Hey kids, this is Eric R. Lowther, a.k.a. Big Oogie Harry Scary, author and one of the zany cast of characters over at the Witch's Hat blog and blogcast, and you've been listening to A Little Dead Podcast. Want to send in a comment or feedback? Then call the Little Dead comment line at 206-338-0665, or send an email to alittledead@gmail.com. You can download the show from iTunes or from the website at alittledead.com. You can also stream the show to your smartphone with stitcher.com. You can follow McPierce on Twitter, and we'd love you to join the Facebook group as well. And there's always the forums at forums.alittledead.com. So until next time, this has been Big Ugly Harry Scary saying, see ya, kids.
Dark days fall upon me every time you come around. Dark days seem to follow you when you are gone into town. And if your eyes burn at the sight of the crucifix, if your lucky number is 666, if you plan my soul's demise as you smile and tell me lies, well, you may be the devil in disguise.
Pictures showing Fox on the set of the film in London. That sounded weird. Edit. The big budget, big named cast film, Contagion, is set to... Edit. Another film that AG... With a PC version coming in... More points of entry for the undead... They can collect stakes on... And they can collect... When you start... Well, not too cheesy. Big thanks to Zaba Cordovan at...
Hey, Gordy, give me a shot!
Bleorg.